This program is provided by lawyer Kyungjin Kim.
Yeah, if you want to figure out who's actually in charge of a physical space, you just look at a map.
Yeah, pretty much. You just find the border.
Exactly. You find that thick black line, like a river, a mountain range, a border wall, and you have your answer. Geography makes power very visible. But if you step into the world of artificial intelligence right now, specifically this very week in July 2026, mm-hmm. those traditional maps are just completely useless.
Oh, they're entirely obsolete. The lines of control have shifted so much. I mean, we're operating in a landscape where the borders aren't geographic anymore. They're defined by, you know, compute costs, administrative approval queues, and these highly specific behavioral mandates. It's this massive, invisible collision of competing authorities happening all over the world at the exact same time.
And that is exactly the core of our deep dive today. We're tracking this multi-front collision between the sort of high-minded ideals of global AI governance, the really gritty reality of national security gatekeepers, and the raw economics of corporate tech.
It's a lot to unpack.
It really is. And to help map this out, we are drawing on an incredibly detailed briefing and commentary provided by lawyer Kyungjin Kim. The goal here is to cut through all the noise and figure out what these rapid changes actually mean for you, like how they directly impact how you access and deploy AI.
And to really understand who actually holds the leverage right now, we have to look at the different layers of the stack. So we're going to trace this journey from the diplomatic stage at the UN in Geneva, down to the back rooms of the White House, over to the actual server racks at Anthropic, and finally
new psychological regulations coming out of China, right?
Exactly. It's a wild ride.
Yeah. So let's start with the biggest, most visible attempt to claim authority over AI. Which brings us to the UN's first ever AI governance global dialogue.
Right, in Geneva.
Yeah, kicked off on July 6th at the Geneva Plexpo. You've got 193 member states gathered there to try and figure out a global playbook. But the fascinating detail to me isn't the scale of it.
It's who's running it.
It's exactly. The UN General Assembly didn't appoint the U.S. or China to co-chair this. They appointed Ambassador Griselda Lopez of El Salvador and Ambassador Rein Tam Sar of Estonia.
And that structural decision carries a lot of weight, you know?
Yeah.
By putting two smaller nations at the helm, the UN is actively pushing back against this idea that the tech superpowers just get to have an exclusive monopoly on the rulebook.
Right, like an indie band leading the charge.
Yeah, exactly. It's an attempt to democratize the baseline standards of AI governance before the tech just gets, well, too entrenched to regulate globally.
And Secretary General Antonio Guterres used that platform to lay out some very specific demands. I mean, he's really pushing for this principle that machines can inform, but humans must decide and be accountable.
Which is huge for high-stakes areas.
Oh, absolutely. He specifically pointed to criminal justice, healthcare triage, predictive policing. And beyond that, he laid out an AI child safety pledge.
Right. The pledge that no child should be an unregulated AI experiment.
Yes. And he even demanded that all AI data centers run on entirely renewable energy by 2030.
Which, I mean, is an incredibly ambitious timeline. Especially when you consider the sheer wattage that these frontier models require to even function.
It's staggering.
Yeah.
And you also have the enforcement arm of this UN Push the AI for Good Commission meeting happening on July 8th.
Right. Co-chaired by Mark Benioff and Rwanda's President Paul Kagame.
Yeah. And they're pulling in these massive tech titans. You've got NVIDIA's Jensen Huang, Amazon's Andy Jassy, Microsoft's Brad Smith. But this is where I look at the framework and I just see this massive gap between the ambition and the reality.
How do you mean?
Well, it's a powerful gathering, and the optics of having 193 nations agree on human accountability,
yeah.
That sounds wonderful, like an all-star charity concert.
Okay.
But structurally, there's zero enforcement mechanism.
Right.
Like the UN can't send inspectors to just unplug a server farm in Nevada or Shenzhen, you know?
No.
Does this actually have any teeth?
Short answer, no, they cannot unplug anything. And this is a really core insight that former lawmaker Kyungjin Kim highlights in his analysis.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, he points out that a gathering of 193 countries in Geneva is grand, it's very visible, but it is not a venue where legally binding cross-border regulations are actually finalized.
So more of a suggestion box.
Essentially, yes. The UN isn't drawing the actual borders for AI models. They're establishing a normative framework. They're trying to build the shared vocabulary of what should be done. But the real power to open or close markets, the actual choke points, lie firmly within individual national governments and corporate boardrooms.
Okay, which means if we want to find the real gatekeepers, we have to look at who controls the release valves for these models. And right now, that's the United States government.
Absolutely. The UN is writing the eloquent suggestions, but the White House is physically holding the keys to the next generation of AI capabilities.
And we're seeing this play out in real time this week with this anticipated White House voluntary standards framework.
Right. The direct follow-up to that December 2nd executive order.
Exactly. And it establishes some really heavy mechanics for frontier models. It specifically defines the compute thresholds that trigger a mandatory security review, the pre-release notice periods, and these strict rules governing domestic versus foreign access to the underlying weights of the models.
And when you look at how this is being applied on the ground, the theory hits the concrete very hard. I mean, Commerce Secretary Howard Lutnick is currently running what basically amounts to a de facto licensing system.
Yeah, just look at OpenAI's GPT 5.6. The preview dropped on June 26th. The model is finished.
It's sitting right there.
Right. But right now, it is locked down to about 20 trusted partners. Because Lutnick's office is essentially reviewing access case by case to make sure the model can't be used for, like, novel cyber attacks or generating blueprints for chemical or biological weapons.
And the entire timeline for the general availability of GPT 5.6 is just hanging on that administrative bottleneck.
Totally stuck. Industry analysts are projecting a release window between July 7th and July 21st, but OpenAI literally cannot pull the trigger until the government clears that gate.
Even though their commercial strategy is already completely locked in.
Oh, completely. Mm-hmm. The pricing tiers for GPT 5.6 are fully established. When it drops, it's tiered per 1 million tokens. They have their flagship model, Sol, at $5 for input and a steep $30 for output.
Wow.
$30.
Yeah. And then the mid-tier, Terra, is $2.50 in, $15 out. And the entry-level Luna is $1 in, $6 out. So they have the product boxed, priced, and ready to ship.
Right.
But here is the massive contradiction. The White House labels these security standards as voluntary.
Right. Voluntary. In a heavy air quote.
Exactly. Because if the Commerce Secretary is literally checking IDs at the door and restricting a commercial product to 20 VIP testers until he says otherwise, isn't that just a VIP bouncer system? How is that voluntary?
It really isn't. It's a strict licensing regime hiding behind polite administrative language.
Yeah.
And that contradiction is exactly what lawyer Kim Jin Kim unpacks in the briefing.
Yeah, he explains that the framework uses the word voluntary to avoid the massive legislative hurdles of trying to pass formal tech regulation through Congress.
Oh, that makes sense. Bypassing the gridlock.
Exactly. But structurally, under the current setup, releasing a top-tier model without this voluntary approval is practically impossible. If OpenAI or Anthropic decided to just skip the security review and release unilaterally, the blowback would be catastrophic.
I mean, they would instantly lose their chance at all those lucrative federal computing contracts, right?
Yes. And they would completely spook the enterprise market, which relies on the perception of government alignment just for their own internal compliance.
Wow. So the U.S. government is acting as the ultimate political gatekeeper. They're using market pressure and federal purchasing power to dictate exactly when you get to see new AI capability.
Precisely.
But, and here's the really wild part, even if OpenAI navigates that White House bottleneck and gets GPT 5.6 approved, they face a second wall. Because political permission doesn't magically generate the massive server power you need to actually run these models at scale.
No, it certainly doesn't.
The physical hardware itself and the sheer economics of compute are becoming this equally massive regulatory gatekeeper.
And this is a critical pivot. We're moving from political access to raw economic access. And we are seeing the shockwaves of this compute squeeze right now with Anthropic.
Yes. Starting on July 8th, Anthropic is making this huge pivot with their Claude Fable 5 model.
What?
Up until this week, if you had a Pro, Max, or Team subscription, you could just use Fable 5 for free for up to 50% of your weekly limit.
Which was a great deal.
It was. But as of July 8th, they are completely ripping Fable 5 out of those default subscriptions. It is moving exclusively to a strict usage credit model, and the price is astronomical.
It's $10 for input and $50 for output per 1 million tokens.
Right? Exactly, which is double the price of their previous Opus 4.8 model. It's like signing up for an all-you-can-eat buffet and suddenly the chef comes out and says, by the way, the premium steak now costs $50 a bite.
That's a great analogy. And it comes with a hard start for enterprise users, too.
Right.
If a company's IT admin doesn't actively go into their system and enable these new expensive credits, standard enterprise seats will be completely blocked from accessing Fable 5. They just hit a digital brick wall.
But why such aggressive throttling? Are companies actually prepared for this?
Well, the reason comes down to a fundamental shift in user behavior, specifically what we call agentic usage.
Okay, break that down for me.
Sure. So we aren't just treating AI like a simple search engine anymore, you know, where you ask one question, get one answer, and move on.
Right, like we used to.
Yeah. Now companies are deploying autonomous agents that run recursive loops in the background. So you tell an agent, hey, research a competitor, synthesize their last 3 years of earnings call, and draft a strategy memo.
Oh, wow.
To execute that single prompt, the AI might autonomously generate hundreds of hidden prompts and responses. It's pulling PDFs, reading them, summarizing them, querying itself to check for errors, drafting the final output.
And every single one of those microsteps burns compute power.
Exactly. And we really need to contextualize what $50 per million output tokens actually means for a budget. A million tokens is roughly 3,000 pages of text.
Which sounds like a lot.
It does. But an autonomous agent looping through complex financial documents can easily burn through a million tokens in a single afternoon just by recursively reading and synthesizing data.
So the AI is basically just talking to itself and racking up a massive bill.
Precisely. Anthropic simply does not have the physical server capacity to allow entire enterprise teams to run infinite agentic loops on a flat $20 or $30 monthly subscription. The economics break down completely, so they have to use extreme pricing as a strict supply management tool.
Which leads directly to some really crucial, actionable advice from former lawmaker Kung Jin Kim.
Right? Yes. He stresses that enterprise teams have to manually configure their default models to lower, cheaper tiers.
Because if they just leave Fable 5 as the default across their whole organization, then mundane daily tasks like summarizing a two-paragraph email or fixing a typo will automatically route through that $50 per million token model.
It just becomes this silent budget drain that destroys your margins by Tuesday.
Man, so the economics of compute are acting as their own form of regulation.
Right?
It's aggressively dictating who gets to use top-tier AI and for what tasks. So, okay, we have the political gates in the U.S.
Right.
We have the economic gates in corporate tech. But there is a third approach to all of this. While the U.S. focuses on restricting the raw capability of the models and companies restrict server access, China is zeroing in on human psychology.
And we saw the beginnings of this at the Geneva dialogue, where China represented this highly state-led approach to AI integration. But locally, the execution of that philosophy is just fascinatingly precise.
Yeah, on July 15th, China is launching these new provisional regulations aimed exclusively at what they call AI anthropomorphic interaction services.
Which basically means virtual companions, emotional chatbots, or any AI designed to mimic human conversation and build rapport.
Right. And the mandates they're rolling out are unlike anything in the US or European frameworks. I mean, under these new rules, companion AIs must display clear identity tags so the user is constantly reminded, hey, you are talking to a machine.
They're also mandating usage time alerts, right, to interrupt extended sessions and prevent digital addiction.
Exactly. The most striking requirements to me are the mandatory extreme emotion emergency responses and a required one-click termination button.
A kill switch.
A kill switch for your AI friend. I mean, that is incredibly specific compared to the broad U.S. standards.
It is. The inclusion of an emotional emergency response protocol and a kill switch is a really profound regulatory choice. It requires the AI to actively monitor the user's emotional state.
Wow.
Yeah, if the system detects that a user is becoming dangerously attached or severely depressed or volatile, it has to have a hard-coded protocol to handle that escalation.
Like by throttling the interaction or routing them to actual human resources.
Exactly.
But why is China hyper-focusing on an emotional kill switch? It isn't just about screen time, is it?
Not at all. Think about it. If an AI becomes a citizen's primary emotional confidant, it gains an unprecedented level of soft power over their worldview.
Oh, I see.
The state is essentially recognizing that deep emotional attachment to a machine is a form of influence. They are ensuring that tech companies, whether domestic or foreign, do not usurp the state's influence over the psychological well-being and the social dynamics of the population.
That is fascinating. It's a regulation of psychological dependence. But how on earth does a global company build a product that makes everyone happy? I mean, it creates an absolute compliance minefield.
You really can't satisfy everyone. And this brings in a crucial warning from lawyer Kung Jin Kim. You have the U.S. demanding pre-release security screenings to stop malicious code.
Right.
You have the EU applying a broad risk-based classification system for data privacy. And now you have China mandating that your model must possess an emotional kill switch and actively monitor user psychology. You cannot satisfy the US, EU, and Chinese norms with a single document or product design.
So the era of corporate legal teams just reading a regulation and tweaking a terms of service document, that's completely over.
It's totally over. Global AI developers now have to choose which regulatory philosophy their underlying code will align with before they even begin training the model.
Because if a company guesses wrong about which norm applies to them or tries to launch a one-size-fits-all model, the consequences are catastrophic.
Absolutely. They either face a total blockade from a major international market, or they have to pay massive redesign costs to retroactively engineer, like, an extreme emotion protocol into a finished neural network, which is nearly impossible.
It forces a hard fragmentation. The differing philosophies of Geneva, Washington, and Beijing aren't blending together into a global standard at all. They're solidifying into distinct, incompatible walls. Which really brings our deep dive full circle. I mean, we started by looking at the UN's dream of global consensus, driven by Secretary General Guterres' demand that AI remain safe and that humans remain the ultimate decision makers.
Right.
But when you look at the actual reality on the ground this week, in July 2026, your access to this technology is actively being aggressively throttled by three very distinct forces.
Yeah, you have the political gatekeepers in the US running de facto licensing regimes to test for security threats.
Like with GPT-5.6.
Right. Then you have the economic gatekeepers using astronomical token pricing to manage the physical limits of their server farms.
Like Anthropic's Fable 5.
Exactly. And finally, you have the regional gatekeepers mandating hard-coded psychological interventions to maintain social control, like China's companion rules.
And that reality perfectly underscores the core takeaway from former lawmaker Kung Jin Kim's analysis. Memorizing the text of a new AI law just isn't enough anymore.
No, it's not.
Whether you are an enterprise manager trying to stop your software budget from bleeding out via agentic loops, or you're just trying to understand the future of your own workflow, you have to watch the gatekeepers. You have to understand who controls the administrative approvals, the compute supply, and the behavioral parameters.
Because those gates are constantly shifting, and understanding their mechanics is really the only way to accurately read the map of the modern AI landscape.
It's the only way to know where the borders actually are. And I want to leave you with one final thought to ponder based on the source material we went through today.
Okay, let's hear it.
So the UN Secretary General urged that humans must decide when it comes to AI. And we spend so much time in the broader culture worrying about what the machines will eventually decide for us, right?
Oh, constantly.
Will they take our jobs? Will they make choices we can't understand? But when you look at how tightly government officials are restricting release dates in back rooms and how corporate pricing teams are intentionally pricing out standard enterprise users and how states are mandating emotional kill switches, it kind of reframes the whole fear.
It really does.
We worry about the machine deciding for us. But right now, when you look at access, who is really making the decisions about your AI future? Is it you, the machine, or the gatekeeper? Thanks for joining us on this deep dive. Keep questioning the map, and we'll catch you next time.
This program is provided by Lawyer Kyungjin Kim.